Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. I hope everybody is well, and I hope everybody made it through today. For a lot of people, this was an incredibly, incredibly sad day. So even though I would like very much to talk about how important it is to keep everybody, I don't know what other word to use other than clean and sanitary after things like hurricanes. But I want to talk about that because I have both the girls on the show tonight who may have some answers for us in regard to that. It is incredibly dangerous after there's this much destruction between the chemicals, the gasoline, all the different things that gets dumped into our earth, our water. If you live out in the country and you drink your well water, hopefully you have a softening system, but God knows what you're getting. And then, of course, there's the fact that there's death. And it's not so much here in the States, but certainly in the Bahamas. That's going to be one of the major obstacles for people to stay safe right now. Once they can get where they need to go, and let me mention, that means to a lot of them coming here to Florida. We need to really talk about how we keep ourselves as clean as we can. And that, of course, has to do with breathing as well. So let me bring in Shelly first. And then, hi, Shell.
Hey, Renee. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Doing pretty good. Doing pretty good. Yeah, I'm mindful of what today is the anniversary of. There were some prayer groups that were, you know, praying for survivors and those who you know, lost loved ones. So it's a very mindful day, a patriotic day. And it's, you know, because ultimately we did rise above that, you know, horrible, horrible incident. And, you know, for most Americans, it made us stronger.
Well, I have a couple things in regard to 911, something a little bit more personal and on the line of bullying that I would like to mention tonight, too. But as I said, I've had a lot of people call me and say, should we be worried living out here in the country, you know, with our water and stuff like that now? And I'm like, I don't think we need to be worried right now. We didn't have any of that kind of devastation. But
right,
as I said, by the shipload, those poor souls that are homeless, and some of them are totally alone now, they're on their way here. So
right.
As much as we want to welcome them, we also have to be wise and watch out for ourselves as well. So I'd really like to talk about a few things. You know, I mean, I thought of a million things, but I didn't really think of anything that's you know, really really going to make a difference. So let's bring Monica in. Maybe she's got some tricks up her sleeve. Hi, Monica. How are you?
I'm fine, Renee. How are you? Hi, Shelly.
Hi,
good.
Monica.
Good, good, good.
Hi. Good.
So it's what do you think? I mean, do you think this is something we need to be worried about, or do you think this is something that will dissipate as long as everybody just does the normal, you know.
Are you talking about people coming here from the Bahamas?
Yeah.
When you say, is this something we have to be worried about? Well, I mean, I was on the internet last night because I was trying to follow up on a couple of some of what I had heard about that was going on in the Bahamas, and I was trying to get more information because the news on the TV covers so much, but there's other parts of the stories. So I went on the internet last night to see if there were other written articles about it. And one of the things that I guess I kind of knew this in my head, but I hadn't heard it, is that there are so many dead bodies that are still buried, both human
yep.
beings and animals, that the stench of decomposition is starting to fill the air. Now, I have
right.
smelled, you know, decomp from finding dead animals. So I know what that smell. I've never had.
Yep.
I've never seen a dead human, but I have found dead animals. So I know what that smell is, and it's horrific. And now you're talking
mm-hmm.
about all the animals that didn't survive, and all the human beings that didn't as the water receded. Now these bodies are starting
right.
to decay. So that is both an emotional trauma because that smell is horrible. But it's also
yep.
a health hazard because it carries bacteria.
Right.
So I don't
right.
know that the people coming here from the Bahamas are a danger to us. I think the danger is for them remaining on Abaco and the main Bahama island. I know that Nassau, the island of Nassau, is taking a lot of the people. And there's another island. I can't think of the name of it. I read it in the article last night. I didn't recognize the name, so I'm not recalling it off the top of my head. But there's actually two islands that are taking people from the Bahamas, and then also many of them are coming here to Florida. Personally, I don't think that we're in jeopardy from people coming from Bahamas because of the hurricane. I mean, maybe they were ill for other reasons, but I don't think the hurricane is making them ill. I think the jeopardy is for any of these people that as of today are still stranded in Bahamas because it's such an unhealthy
mm-hmm.
environment, both from bacteria and just emotionally just seeing that devastation every day.
Mm-hmm. Well, but that's the deal, Shell. I mean, that is the deal. The longer that they have to be there, the more opportunity that they have to pick up all of that kind of bacteria. And there isn't much that is more live than the death of live things, even grass and greenery. I mean, you know, if it's water soaked and everybody, I'm not really what I would call a germaphobe, but I do have some aversions to having things be really not clean. And
all right, but think about it.
I'm worried that they're going to come here with, you know, that they're going to come here not well. And I'm more worried about them than I am us. But then there's also the other side of the coin about what is that going to do for the people that are here that aren't healthy already. Is it, that's what I'm asking. Do we think that's going to be an issue or no?
Well, the reason I was saying what I said a moment ago was because it's not like they're catching the flu. I don't believe those type
of
bacterial infections are necessarily contagious. So just because somebody is sick doesn't put them in a position of being of putting other people at risk, you know. I mean, we have people all the time that get bacterial infections, you know, they get injured or they're in a moldy house or whatever. They don't really put other people in jeopardy because of their ill health. So it's not like a flu epidemic or something like that.
No.
So I'm not talking about
that kind of illness. Yeah, but I'm not talking about that kind of illness. I'm talking about the bacteria. I'm talking about staph infection. I'm talking about MRSA. I'm talking about those kind of things. I'm not talking about them feeling like crap. If they don't feel like crap, I'm gonna think they've been in a plastic bag for the last 4 weeks. That's not what I'm worried about. I'm worried about decomposition, water that has been, you know, floating bodies in it, all those kind of things, and all those people are in it. There's no escaping it. So they're
right.
in it, and then they come here. Are they taking them someplace to help them get, you know, I don't know what other word to use besides sanitize. What's another word for that? It sounds so clinical, and that's not what I mean. I'm thinking of my own kids. If they got involved in something like that, I'd want to stick them in the tub with a bubble bath or something. You know what I'm saying?
A lot of them are going to hospitals first. I don't know if all of them are, but I know a lot of them are going to hospitals first. But I still don't, I mean, Monica may have a different opinion about that. I still don't see them as putting anybody that's helping them in jeopardy. Because I don't see it as a contagion.
How can you not? How can you not see it as something that's going to be able to be spread to other people? I mean, MRSA is like insane. MRSA can wipe out hospitals.
Well, yeah. I mean, MRSA is a very specific type of bacteria in the skin. I don't know. I mean, I haven't heard any reports. I was, most of the health issues were related to injuries from being hit by the debris, having heart attacks from the stress.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know if there's going to be those type of bacterial infections ongoing, but I think the vast majority of them are not coming over here with contagious conditions.
Trump wouldn't
mm-hmm.
let them come over here contagious conditions. He doesn't even want them here. It's the humanitarian effort that's opening up for them and pushing it.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
I'm sure
mm-hmm.
that they're giving some sort of a health release
vaccination
before they're let out into the public. If a person
there's anything to worry about it?
No.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No. I mean, unless somebody brings over cholera or something. I heard they had cholera moving around there, but that was just a rumor from
mm-hmm.
one of the people they rescued off of the island, but a lot of people aren't able to get here unless they have all their papers. I mean, they've got to have things buttoned up real tight. So,
mm-hmm. Well, of course, that's the other issue. That's the issue that's out there right now, is paperwork. Well, the young man that I've been corresponding with who lived in my house when he was a teenager, he was born in the Bahamas, and his mother and father split up, and mom came back here, brought him with her, and then to this day, I'm not sure what he did, but he did something illegal. I don't know what. I don't know whether he got caught doing drugs or selling drugs or something, but they sent him back to the Bahamas. They didn't want to deal with him, and that's where he's been ever since, and that was when he was like in his early 20s, and now he's in his late 40s, and he has a child, and he's the one who has sent me so much information and many pictures that he took himself, and he's the one who told me about the sharks and the bodies and the homes floating out into the ocean, and I mean, he talks to me on Messenger, so most of the time he's crying. That's how emotional it is. But
yeah,
I just got worried about this because I know that even after hurricanes here in the South, in Andrew, there were hospitals were overflowing, not with broken limbs, not with things like that, but with people getting infections. Because when even our grass and our plants and everything sit in the water, they make bacteria. I mean, they bubble right up and make bacteria.
Right.
And if you have no place to go but walk through it and then no running water anywhere, I can only assume that we're going to have an issue. And as far as things like MRSA and all those things are concerned, here in South Florida, they've run rampant. They've gone through hospitals. I have personal references to that. So it just crossed my mind today when I was thinking about all those poor people, and then I got thinking about 911. And even that scenario I thought about. I thought to myself, I wonder what they did after that happened. I mean, did somebody come in? I don't ever remember anybody talking about it. Do either of you talk about cleaning up you know, the bodies, the debris from everything that happened that day. So
I remember.
Did we have any repercussions? Okay.
Yeah,
any
people are dead
from
now.
Any of that?
People are dead now because Giuliani says it's clean, it's clear. Just come on and help us dig out of here. Help us clean up.
Yep.
Lying to the
yep.
people and told him
mm-hmm.
it's fine. Air quality is fine. And now
mm-hmm.
you got people
yep.
dying now with all kinds of cancers and everything
right.
because
yep.
it was not fine.
Yeah, lung
right.
diseases. In
that's
fact,
right.
we had a couple of the first
that's
responders
right.
came to Hippocrates that were
yeah.
injured in 9/11. So yeah, a lot of the first responders, a lot of the firemen, and a lot of the construction workers that went in after the fact, because there were chemicals in the debris that they were breathing
asbestos.
In. Yep, and it was causing
yes,
a tremendous lung damage. Yep. A lot of lung disease after that, but again, not a lot of contagious stuff. So that's my point. And when
right.
you were talking about Andrew, just like when we had what was it? Francis was the storm that sat on us when we were in Royal Palm for like a day or whatever. I think it was Francis or Jean. I don't remember. But anyway, one of them was in like 2006 or something like that. That hurricane was all up and down my street. The canals had overflowed. And they were saying that there was sewage in the water, not to walk through the
right.
water. So people were getting bacterial infections, but not in a way where they were contagious to each other. It was environmental factors that was causing all the illnesses and hospitalizations. And I think the same thing was true for Andrew. So the reason I keep going back to that is that I don't really think the Bahamian people are presenting a contagion risk for people in Florida. And remember, only a certain portion of them are coming here. And like Monica said, they have to go through, they have to have their papers, they have to have a health check and things like that. So they're not just letting them cross the borders indiscriminately. You know, Trump's very, very rigid about that. A lot of the Bahamian people are going to Nassau and some of the other islands that are over there, okay? So we're not getting all the people that need to be relocated anyway, and the ones that are coming over here are going through some sort of a check system. But I think anything that they're going to be suffering from is not going to be, as catastrophic as it may be for them, I don't think that they're bringing any contagions over here. And I also believe that MRSA is a product of the hospital environment. I'm actually starting to do some research into that most recently because of something else I had heard about. But I believe that MRSA is a product of the what people go through in hospitals, because a lot of the drugs that they use on people actually diminish the immune system to the point that it allows these type of things. My mom ended up having a severe bacterial. Now, she's in the hospital. She's getting intravenous IV antibiotics, and my mom broke out in a horrific infection while she was in the hospital. And I think that was one of the things that pushed her over the edge. So it's my opinion, and I'm not the only one who believes this way. There are other scientists that are now on the line with me. MRSA is not like a bacteria that's out there that's contagious from person to person. It was actually something that came out of the overuse of certain types of drugs in hospitals that break down a person's immune system, and they actually start having these infections pop up because the immune system can't fight anything off anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, my experience with MRSA has been much more, a much bigger variety, even at Hippocrates. I had two people that I had to keep away from everybody else because hospice told me to, and I had to get them. Actually, one I sent to, I can't remember the name of the place, starts with an S. It's in the islands, and they run a place very similar to Hippocrates, but it's very hospital atmosphere. Everything is, you know, they have clean rooms and they have all that kind of stuff. And a man and a woman that had MRSA so bad that when I brought in hospice to just help me with things like bandages and stuff, because they got, so they were doing that for me. They said, these people shouldn't be around all these other people who have already, who are fighting cancer and fighting this and fighting that. Now, that's not to say that they were right, but they found the need to warn me, and they were immersed in a business that they knew more about it than I did. So I want these people to be saved. And I'm feeling now like, because I brought this up, I'm saying that I'm worried about us and I don't want them here. That's not who I am, and that's not what I mean. I just want to see if there's things that we can do to keep everybody in a better place. Everybody. That's my happy story, is if everybody gets, the right kind of care and the right kind of takes the right measures to keep everybody safe. But you two are both telling me that if a lot of these people that come here, it's usually the weaker people, the elderly, the ones that are already struggling with an illness, they're the ones that have the biggest problems. Like my young friend here, he's still strong. He and his son, who I don't even know how old he is. I think he's under 20. But they're fine, and they're helping all kinds of people, and they're healthy. But then there's all the other people that are not. They're just not, for various reasons. Life has happened to them, and they're not in a safe place. So they come here, and they stay in a hospital with my grandmother, who's struggling, and they're in the hospital together, and they're sharing meals at the same table. You both are telling me that whatever she brought with her from being in that kind of debris and being in the stagnant waters and all that kind of stuff, there wouldn't be anything any of us had to worry about? Is that what you're both saying?
Well, it's not... I don't think a lot of them are going to hospitals. A lot of these people are completely healthy, but they just don't have any homes.
I'm not talking about them. I'm not talking about them. I know that.
Right.
That's what I just said about Kevin and his son. I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about the ones that can make it here with a struggle, and they deserve to be someplace that's safe. But are they, will they, can they be putting... like other loved ones that are already, I have somebody that I follow on Facebook. He's had his mom in and out of dozens of senior citizens' homes. And every time he turns around, he's got a new story that sounds like a horror story of someplace she wasn't. It cost a small fortune to have her there. So if some of these people go into places like that, and obviously you've got the ones that cost an arm and a leg, but then you've also got the VA, and you've got hospice that doesn't turn away anybody. You've got all these other places. My real question, and if there is a chance, how do we guide people? How do we say, keep alcohol handy?
But I thought they were going into refugee centers. I don't think they're just going into mainstream population when they come over here. They're going into refugee centers.
Well, that's where they're supposed to be.
They're not just going into
the
main
court.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, they're not allowed
to
do a job, keep a
job. You're not allowed to what, Monica?
They're not allowed to get a job, or they won't be able to pay for anything. It's not like, they're super rich or anything, or they're poor. And a lot of them are Haitians. A lot of them lost all their papers. So, in fact, they had a ferry set up to take them to Miami, and Trump put a kibosh on it and said, no, take them back, because they didn't have one paper.
Yeah, I read that today.
So.
Yeah. Well, and I think we already knew that kind of crap was going to happen. That happens to people every day. But again, my concern is, I don't have any answers for some of the stuff that's going on because, I'm not large and in charge. Well, I'm large, but I'm not in charge. But I think that we need to be, I have Jane that I worry about, as a for instance, who goes shopping at Publix and Walmart and all these places. And there will be some people that come here that have family here. And if they do get here, you two are telling me that this isn't anything that we need to be worried about. And if somebody asks me, do I dare go out? Do I dare go to Disney World? Maybe some people are there and they came back and they have this horrible disease now because they were in all that stagnant water and dead bodies and all the stuff that we're seeing on the news. You guys are saying we don't need to worry about that because that's not going to happen here. Is that what we're saying?
That could happen no matter what.
Right.
Having MRSA.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that could happen. I have a website up, and MRSA lives for like 9 weeks on a door handle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you go,
yep.
Somebody 9 weeks ago, somebody had MRSA, but they didn't know it because they were at Disney World, and they touched that door handle, and nobody ever cleaned it correctly. So what,
right.
a half a million people are going to get MRSA. It's the chance you take to live. You know,
But the question here, and I get all that, and I believe exactly what you just said, and I know those things to be true. What I'm trying to figure out is if say the three of us were put in charge of welcoming some of those ships in, and we saw people that we could tell just because we've been around the block a few times that they've got something going on. How do we keep everybody? Is there something we should all be doing now? Is there something we should be doing to ourselves? Is there something we should we all be mega dosing on something? I'm just wondering, because people are going to start asking these, because they're going to be
that
scared. Because we've never.
There's nothing you can protect yourself with as far as mega dosing. You know, like my urine therapy. No, that's not going to help you.
Right.
There is nothing other than a surgical mask and surgical gloves. If you're that concerned,
and
I've been seeing
clean.
People. What?
Me too.
Yeah, I've been seeing people lately
I'm seeing people
in Walmart.
With masks on right now.
Yeah, so that's your only way.
Right, right. Well, I do think that there are ways to boost the immune system whenever there's been a flu breakout or something like that. I'll start, like, taking colloidal silver and golden seal for a couple of days. Or if my sister comes home and I'm, like, feeling flu-ish, and she says, oh, my God, a bunch of the, you know, the hair fairies at Bippity Boppity Boutique, all of a sudden, you know, there's a lot of people with a flu there. So what I'll do is I'll start taking things that boost my immune system and it doesn't turn into anything. So I think there are things you can do to boost the immune system, you know, with things like that.
The flu.
But in the same token, I agree with Monica. And you've talked about this before yourself, Rainey, is that, like, you know, washing your hands, being aware. Now, wearing the mask, if you're in that environment and you are around people that potentially have contagions, then, yeah, you have to wear a mask. You have to wear gloves, things like that. You have to protect yourself so that you don't take any contagion away with you to your home. But I still don't think that we have a major problem with that, to be honest with you. But if you are, like, say you are on the receiving line, you're somebody that works in taking these refugees in and helping them to get placed, and you see some that are obviously sick, and you do have that concern, then, wear a mask and wear gloves. That's probably the easiest way to protect yourself.
And do we think that's the best advice to give to somebody who says, you know, now I'm seeing all these people in my neighborhood, I'm seeing this and I'm seeing that, because all that scuttlebutt has started. And it doesn't mean much right now because it's not all over. But I was told 2 days ago from some people who live here in the Acreage who are friends with somebody, I don't know the names of these people that own cruise ships, you know, like the Princess, and that's just a name off the top of my head. I'm not saying the Princess, but, you know, the small casino ships, shell like we've been out on before.
Right.
And they went over and brought back animals already. The Big Dog Ranch over here, you know, a quarter of a mile from me, just took in 50 dogs.
Right.
And so already people are talking about, you know, what if they come home and, or what if they come over here and they have diseases from being in all that disgusting mess and all the, I mean, you know, because they're already saying that stuff to me. And I'm kind of saying everything you girls said to me tonight, I don't think it's something we got to worry about it. But the more I thought about it, the more I wasn't sure I was right about that. The more I thought about the things that I know can happen in a hospital where you're supposed to really be safeguarded, it just kept eating at me, and I thought, you know, I think we need to talk about this.
Well, remember, the water has receded. So when the people were in the water, okay, and they got sick from being in the water, it's different than now what's being airborne. So the airborne bacteria now from all the dead bodies that are there, both human and animal, it is now a concern for the Bahamians that are still trapped there that haven't been taken away. But within the first few days, when there was a mass exodus, the water had receded. It's not like these people were floating around in this water, contaminated water, with decomposing bodies. The bodies hadn't started breaking down yet. It was too soon. So I don't think there would have been the same type of bacteria that there is forming now, a week later, with these dead bodies still there and haven't being, being dealt with and, you know, and taken to the mortuaries and things like that. So I think we're talking a very different situation anyway, and a lot of the illnesses are not from bacterial infections, but from injuries, from debris and things like that. That's most of the hospitalizations. Dehydration from not being mm-hmm. able to eat or drink. Nobody thought it was going to go on for 48 hours.
What happens to that injury, Shell? What happens to that injury? Say you've just lacerated your leg. Say you're 50 years old and you're pretty rugged, you're pretty strong, you work every day, you're doing this, you're doing that, but you've been in that water for days because your house is gone and you have to walk in the water in the streets just to get where you're going. Jumping in the side of a boat doesn't even seem realistic to me if you can touch when you're walking in the water. I wouldn't jump in a boat and take up space. I'd walk in the water. So say you've been doing that, and you have this big cut on your leg. And, you know, there is no real clean water to clean it with, I'm guessing. So you just keep walking in the water. This is going to turn into a disaster. And now you're one of the strong people and you're getting around.
Reading. The water's not there
anymore.
It's
still
there,
honey. It's receded, but it's still flooded everywhere. Kevin's riding around in a boat. Everywhere. There's still water.
The
ocean receded, but everything is still, I mean, knee-deep water almost everywhere that you got to walk in.
Yeah.
So it's,
I still don't think these people are putting us at jeopardy. I think they're in massive jeopardy. I don't think that they can possibly put us in jeopardy. I think the first responders that are dealing with them coming over here know how to handle the incoming people. Not everybody that's coming over here is injured or sick. A lot of the people that are making their way, especially to the U.S., all right, it's a different story for the Nassau Island, because a lot of these people have family over there, so they're just going to their family in Nassau. But for the people that are coming over to the U.S., I don't think we have a risk of contagions. I really don't.
Well, I hope you're right. I do hope you're right. And I think if I was going to give out advice in the months to come, it would be to be aware, and it would be to make sure that you you pay attention to what's going on around you and be aware of the things that you see and take care of yourself sensibly. I didn't think there would be one answer, but I do think it's something that needs to be discussed and looked at. And I think that in order to always stay in a relatively safe place, we always have to be aware and think of these things that might come up and might not be so easy to just walk away from. And this would be one of them. This would definitely be one of them. I don't know whether anybody's going to bring anything that's contagious either. But I do know in our history, humanity has been damn near wiped out on several occasions when everybody thought they were safe. So I think that we just need to be aware and need to watch out for ourselves and our own. The mask is a great idea. Mm-hmm. Obviously not staying any place where you feel like, you know, it's not, if you're traveling. Spike and I went into a hotel one time and there was no place else to stay and there was a hurricane. And I wouldn't sleep on the bed. We went to Walmart. I bought Lysol and bleach and peroxide and cleaned the bed and bought new sheets and slept on it. I wouldn't have slept on it. So,
wow.
I mean, you know, hopefully everybody, you know, does what they need to do to keep themselves safe. But it's nothing to mess with today because MRSA is a real thing here in South Florida, and it is killing people, and it is putting people mm-hmm. in a bad place, and it's losing limbs for some people as well. So,
yep.
Let's... sad thing, and that's of course what today is, 911. I have a question for both of you. I want to know what you were both doing the morning of September 11th. Do you remember? Who wants to go
yeah.
first?
Okay. Who?
Who wants to go first? You, Iman?
Yeah.
Do you want to go first?
Sure.
Okay.
I was doing my prep for our restaurant that we had at the time, and we had several TVs all over the restaurant.
Mm.
And Lindsay was in front of it, and and I heard them, oh my God, oh my God. So I came out, and as they were playing the plane going into the first tower.
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
That was it. I remember my sister-in-law, Sherry, was there because she was setting up the dining room, and she was getting all upset about it, and I'm like, somebody pissed off somebody. You know, I didn't know then
mm-hmm.
at the time that it was an inside job, you know,
right.
but...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So yeah,
mm-hmm.
I was in my restaurant.
Yeah. And did you manage the rest of the day okay?
Yeah. It didn't.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was terrible. It was sad. I mean, you know, I couldn't stand in front of the TV or watch TV all day. I had, you know, work to do. But
work to do.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It was.
Yeah. Yeah. It was an awful day, that's for sure. What were you doing, Shell?
Well, I was actually working from my home office. I was working off-site for a company, and so I was doing I was working on some kind of a quote, and I had a TV that was across from where my desk was, and I used to put it on in the morning just for, like, to have background stuff. I had the news on. And same thing, I saw the first report, and I was in shock at first. I remember stopping and just looking at the TV because it was like unbelievable. You couldn't wrap your brain around it. It was like you were seeing something that wasn't computing. And I remembered that at that time, Craig was still working in Manhattan. Now, Craig was my ex-fiance, and I knew that he was working. He was working in Manhattan, and I remember that I kept sending him texts. I was trying to find out what was going on. Well, not texts, but I didn't even have a phone. I kept calling him, and it took hours before he was able to call me back and let me know that he was okay. He had gotten halfway into work, and he said he got so nauseous that he had to pull over, and he actually ended up throwing up. So he turned around and he went home. Gets home, gets out of his car, goes inside, goes to lie down, and either his brother or his mother came in the room and told him what happened, and he was stunned. And I had heard that same story from other people that were supposed to be there, and they were like, they got sick that morning, or they just felt off, and they ended up calling out or whatever, So I find it fascinating that some people were prevented from going in there. Craig to this day does not.
Yeah.
If he had gone in, he would have been on one of the upper floors. I forgot what floor he worked on, but he more than likely would have been one of the casualties because of the floor he worked on, and I just find that amazing. And there were other people. It was almost like, you know, that it was in the ether already that this was happening before it actually happened. Remember that there were those several children. There were at least a half a dozen children all around the world that had a premonition dream, and some of the artwork, they drew pictures of what happened 2 days before this actually happened. So the thought processes behind this were already out there for some people to grab onto, because there were a lot of people worldwide that had premonitions around that. So it's a much bigger story, you know, than a lot of people realize. But yeah, whenever I remember exactly where I was, what I was doing. I remember how the whole morning unfolded. I also remember my very first reaction watching as they kept replaying the buildings being hit and then the buildings going down hours later as the buildings collapsed. To this day, I remember my initial reaction. And this is before there was any official narrative as to what happened. Okay, and the official narrative doesn't really deal with the facts of what people saw, but it was a demolition job. The two main buildings and the building, I think it was building 9, Building 7, right. Meanwhile, building 7 wasn't touched by anything, but it went down also, and they came up with some screwball reason that happened. And I remember
that
morning.
I knew it.
Yep.
At that point, inside job.
I actually didn't realize it was an inside job then. My initial reaction was because, ironically, and I've talked about this before on the show, ironically, a week or two earlier, I had seen one of these science specials, and they were showing how they do building demolitions and how they get the building to go straight down into its footprint, where you could actually demolish a building that's standing right next to another building and the other building isn't even touched, you know, and that's basically what happened here. And I'm watching these buildings go down. So my initial reaction, and I'll never forget this, was, oh my God, it had to take weeks to set that demolition, because this was a huge building and you have to do it on every floor and you have to do it in the weight bearing joists on every floor, and it has to be completely balanced to go straight down like that. So I already knew the science behind it, you know. And I'm watching it, and I'm like, oh, my God, this had to take weeks and weeks and weeks to set it up on all three of those buildings. That's when I realized it was an inside job. When I realized it was a demolition, I said there had to have been people on the inside that were working with these factions, you know, and then you find out later they were actually hired by them. But this is why the American people have got to demand that the story of 9/11 does not die. The official narrative, which is now being taught in schools, that it was planes going into the buildings and it exploded and it weakened the infrastructure and the buildings went down. No, the buildings didn't fall over. They went down into their footprint. And I think that it's a disservice to all the victims to allow the real perpetrators who still have not been brought to justice as of this date.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think, Reedy?
Well, I too have. Well, I, you know, Big Spike was a, you know, he watched every, I don't know, video that people made, everything that was done, and looked at all this stuff over and over again, and it really was something that he was bothered by. And then years later, I met a man who was in show business, a comedian, and I picked him up at the airport. He was going to stay with us at Hippocrates, and we started talking about 911. And I said, don't you think it's strange that there was none of the bigwigs that were always there every day, every day, every day, weren't there that day? And he grabbed a hold of my leg and squeezed my thigh. I almost jumped out of the driver's seat. And he said, why did you say that? And I said, I don't know. It just makes me wonder. And he said, you're absolutely right, Reenie. It had to do with not outsiders. And I, that man's name is Dick Gregory. I don't believe he's with us any longer, but he spent a long time with us at Hippocrates. And he and I talked about that day a lot. And he was a real believer in the fact that, you know, it was something that was done by our own, which is just, in my eyes, heartbreaking. And
unfathomable.
That's why you have to talk about everything. Yeah, it's, I mean, you know, I don't, everything simple people like us do is, first of all, survival, and to take care of the people that we love, and to get every day and have, get up every day and have a purpose and do the things that we believe we're supposed to be doing. And that's the way we live our lives. And then there's these people who think life is king of the hill, and they kill to get to be king. And it's hard for me to wrap my brain around it. That day, I had started working at Hippocrates on the 1st of July, 2001. And this, I was having my manager's meeting on a Tuesday morning in the therapy building, and we finished the meeting, and I came out, and Barbara, the elderly lady who worked at the therapy building, she was the manager there, was crying. I said, "What's the matter?" And she says, "Oh my God, Renee, they just bombed the Twin Towers, and they tried to do this and they tried to do that." My cell phone rings, and it's my sister crying and tells me what happened. Then my daughter, then both my, I mean, one phone call right after the other, because they're all someplace where they've either got a radio on or watching TV. And at first, I didn't believe it. I mean, I believe something happened, but I didn't believe it was as horrendous as this. Babies in the daycare center. I mean, you know, for me, that was like unfathomable. Nobody kills babies in a daycare center.
Right.
Yeah. But we did.
Murphy, Oklahoma City.
Mm-hmm.
Babies in a daycare center.
Yep.
Got bombed.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. And
so,
if anybody thinks that a van with some fertilizer in it did that to that building, they're out of their minds.
Exactly. That's what I think too.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but all the questions haven't been answered about that either.
Yeah, I've been studying that, and there are people a lot smarter than me that are kind of work behind the scenes in the government that have other information about that. And actually, those two incidences are very much related to each other.
But again, that's why I'm saying, you know, every time something out of the ordinary happens like this, not that a hurricane is out of the ordinary, and certainly not the devastation of an island that is surrounded by water, all those kind of things have happened through our history, and we certainly, in the balance of things, haven't been around for that long, even though there are days like I feel like I am. But I think that we know that this kind of stuff happens, and we know that there are people that don't care about anything but themselves. And we know that, you know, nobody's really safe anymore. Nobody lives in a place that is protected by anybody, not really. And it's gotten scarier and scarier the older we get. We just brought a brand new baby home, and I look at her and I think to myself, oh, my God, what can she look forward to, really?
Yeah.
I mean, I'd like to think that she can look forward to a beautiful future where everything is easier and more efficient and cleaner and all these wonderful things, because now we know so many things to make it that way. But there's too many money-hungry people. There's too many people that want to be king of the hill.
So one thing that I will say with regard to that, actually, I was gonna suggest this as one of our upcoming shows, because in the research I'm doing, so much of what I do overlaps. So it's like a lot of the stuff seems unrelated. One of the things I just started making a list of is some of the almost superhuman people that are on the planet right now, both children and adults, that are doing just absolutely incredible things. The number of children that are very in tune, that are actually inventing things, that are doing things like cleaning ocean pollution up. Such a monumentally huge endeavor, and there's a young, not even in the United States. This is like a young girl from a third world country, and she actually invented this way of cleaning ocean pollution that's viable. So I would like to talk about this on one of the upcoming shows. A lot of these positive things. There's a blind man, I find this remarkable, who can ride a motorcycle, can ride a bicycle. He uses his tongue to make like sonar sounds, and he can actually walk, jog, ride a bike. He sees in his brain the way a bat sees. When he makes these sounds with his tongue, it creates an image in his brain. He doesn't see like we do. He sees like a bat does, but he can tell where the buildings are. He can tell where trees are. He can tell where things are. All right, even though his eyes don't function, his brain can still pick up images. He has taught 500 other blind people to utilize this method of mobility. So that's what I'm saying.
Shelley, that's what my friend Adam does. I've told that story 100 times.
Yep.
He's a teacher. Yes, he uses bat sonar.
He teaches other blind people about that?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know
that's
how he did it. Oh, okay. Well, I saw the guy on TV that created that method, and he now teaches other blind people, it was just an amazing story. But the bottom line is, we are changing as a species. 50 years ago, if you were blind, you were blind. And this man who created this taught himself as a baby to do this, and now he has taught this, and he's taught other blind people how to do it, and he sets up a course and all that. So I guess Adam must have taken one of his courses. But it just amazes me. I mean, that's not the only story. There's a bunch of other ones like that. But the bottom line is, we as a species are going through some very positive changes. So in the mix with all the negativity, with all the injustices, there's a lot of good that's happening out there. And I think sometimes we need to just have one show that concentrates on that just for some balance. One thing I will say about using the term conspiracy theories, that actually offends me a little bit, because although there are people that are overly paranoid for whatever their reasons are, you know, maybe they do have some sort of mental deficiency or whatever, but most people that question the official narratives are not conspiracy theorists, like, you know, the tinfoil hat hovering in the corner of their room person. Most people that question the official narrative is because it doesn't make sense. What the government is saying doesn't match the facts. That's not being a conspiracy theorist. That's having a brain. And that's saying, okay, fine, this is what you want to say happened, but that doesn't explain this, this, and this. So please address those things. If you do that, they'll call you a conspiracy theorist. So what are they hiding? If there isn't a conspiracy going on, why don't they just address the questions that are being put to them? So I think that's something that Americans have to stop being so down on people that raise conspiracy theories, because most of them, and unfortunately there are some nuts, but for the most part, it's just because people are intelligent enough to realize that the official statements being put out there don't match the facts appropriately.
Well, I think that people that that just don't take, you know, other people's, other people's theories on something that isn't black and white, have every right to question. I'm sure that, as I said, I've told that story about Adam 100 times, or maybe more. And he never, ever ceases to amaze me. And yet, you know, there are people that just look at me and say, oh, that's nice. And they, I don't think they believe me. So I think that all of us question different things, especially if they're close to our heart, and especially if we truly believe in it. I don't know if
you
conspiracy has anything to do with that.
No. If
go
you
ahead.
Asked any Republican, any conservative, you know, how did 9/11 happen? Who did it? They will say,
mm-hmm.
you know, Al-Qaeda, the Taliban. You know, it was that one guy they killed.
Yeah, you're
you
right.
Know, the, no. And if you tell them
Bin
that,
Laden.
No, our people did it, the United States government or whoever, they won't believe you. They'll think you're a nutcase. So, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's
well,
not,
that's because it's not what they want to believe.
Exactly.
You know?
Because
and they
want to
believe
don't
want to deal with
the narrative.
It.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yes. They yes. don't. They don't.
Well, not,
they,
am,
and they and everybody.
I am not a Trump fan. But the one thing I will say, there's a few things that he's done that have gotten my attention. He actually believes that 9/11 was an inside job. And that's why a lot of people in government are really after him to discredit him. He believes that the true perpetrators of 9/11 were never brought to justice.
That's because he was a Democrat before he became a conservative for the money.
Yep.
He was a Democrat for years and years and years.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's a Republican
well,
because, you know, that's the game he's playing. Oops, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
I do
yeah,
not
so.
Like him.
I don't,
yeah,
I it's, it, besides that for me, that's, I don't trust him. That's why I don't like him. I don't trust him. I don't
mm-hmm.
think he's, I don't think he's stable. And that's,
heck no.
You know, nobody cares about that. I just know that he's not stable. And I want to, and I've said this before, he's our president now, so I am respectful. But I watch his behavior, and I've spent my life watching people and talking to people and hearing people and listening to people and having people tell me stories that I thought, oh, my good God, they really believe that. And then, oh, my good God, that really happened to them. So everybody has their way of accepting things. My thing about Trump is that I think he's almost dangerous because he's not well. And that makes
he
me feel
dangerous.
Bad too, by the way, because I'm a good person. Yeah. But on the other note, with all this kind of stuff, I do think that people get scared about things that they don't understand. And a lot of times that's what turns to, you know, the talk about, well, like Shelley mentioned, what was the movie with Mel Gibson and they, the little kid kept saying that there were spaceships coming. Oh, we just talked about it. Signs, something like that. And the little girl's walking around with tinfoil on her head and everything. Remember that movie?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I thought to myself, you know, that was kind of a cute movie. And I thought to myself, I also think that children are quicker on the draw with us because we're so set in our ways about what's right and what's wrong. I mean, this color's always been blue. It's going to stay blue. If you tell me it's red, I'll tell you you're out of your damn mind. I mean, you know, that's just who we are as a people. But we're almost out of time. I want to say that I am worried about the people that are in the Bahamas and what they're going through, and my heart kind of aches for them. But I would like it if whatever we decide to do and however we manifest it, that we keep everyone safe. An effort to save one and to hurt many has never made sense to me. And I just want whatever happens with this transition, I want them all to be safe. They can't stay there anymore. I want them all to be someplace where they can have their life back again. And I want to send out my love and condolences to the people who lost people during 911 and the heartache that they still probably carry. So, but I spent time with two of my sexy senior citizen men yesterday, and they want to do a show about dating after divorce or after death and all this stuff. So I'm hoping we're going to put together a fun show, and they promised to talk on the show and talk about it. So I thought that sounded like fun. I don't know when we'll do it, but I thought it, we've never talked about anything like that. And apparently it's an issue for my older men friends. They're, you know, it was kind of funny listening to the two of them. This is what they told me, though. I said, you know, women just like to spoon. So are you ready for this, girls? We're off the air. Spooning leads to forking.
Oh my God.
That's great.
That's what they both told me. Crack me up. Crack me up. Andy
That's
and
a
Larry.
Good one.
Well, Andy and Larry. Wonderful, right? Thanks, girls. Wow. God bless, and we'll be back on Friday, everybody. Bye bye.
Thanks. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Oh.